Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch brings you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's WWE Monday Night Raw.
So, Brandon, I would call this a pretty straightforward, solid final edition of Monday Night Raw before WrestleMania. In terms of just kind of driving home not only the Raw matches, but also video packages and mentions and plugs for some of the SmackDown stuff. They also snuck in a little bit of Hall of Fame, a little bit of TakeOver hype, not too much. It just felt to me sort of like a balanced, straightforward show. How about you?
Yeah, I mean, they did what they had to do. They hyped the major matches going into Saturday and Sunday with heavy focus, of course, on Drew McIntyre versus Bobby Lashley, which I think is what they needed to focus on. A little bit regarding the Fiend and Alexa Bliss, but primarily focusing on the video package aspect of that, which I think probably at this point is for the best. It was a fairly well-rounded show overall. I wouldn't say that they knocked it out of the park or anything regarding like a go-home show for WrestleMania, but Raw has been struggling in general with storytelling and with filling their 3 hours of TV and feeling like it's meaningful. I don't think that they really changed that tonight. It felt like the build for WrestleMania has felt a little lackluster throughout this whole season, but I think that SmackDown has had a little bit of an easier time masking that, just having the 2 hours, so that their program feels a little bit more loaded as they prepare for WrestleMania, whereas Raw has kind of felt like they needed a little bit of extra filler to get by, and I think you kind of saw that tonight, like with Drew McIntyre and Baron Corbin, or King Corbin, because they needed to bring some guys over from SmackDown just to kind of fill things out and get through this final week of TV.
Yeah, exactly. So did Drew and Lashley and the hype, do you think it energized the audience to watch the match more? Was it more, hey, we know where we are, there's not a lot more we can do. You know, Corbin is out there, just create an opponent for Drew. I have a complaint about that in a moment I'll get to, but, you know, your thoughts on what did they do to elevate or escalate the intensity of it, and did they need to, or is it more about just sort of defining things with, as I would call it, a good promo from Drew, a solid and better than last week promo from Lashley, and MVP being reasonably annoying throughout? Your thoughts.
Yeah, I thought they did a good job tonight putting the finishing touches on this program and what it's been so far. I've really enjoyed Drew McIntyre's mic work for the most part during this main event run, and I think he was really on tonight. I think Drew kind of felt the weight of the moment, needing to sort of carry the talking aspect of this angle, where that's never been Lashley's strong suit, although he has gotten better in that department, particularly under the Hurt Business. I thought Drew's promo was really strong. I liked the fact that he really drove home the idea that both he and Lashley are guys who were brought in as sort of the chosen ones for WWE, and both wound up getting fired and leaving the company before they really reached their peak, and it took them years of kind of scratching and clawing their ways through different avenues on the independent scene and through Impact Wrestling and whatnot in order to get back to WWE and to actually capitalize on the potential that both of them once had. I think that's a good story to tell between the two of them in this match, because, I mean, this is a match that could have happened 10, 12 years ago on WWE pay-per-view and probably would have been the opening match on the card, because these guys just weren't living up to their hype and their potential. And now it's a main event of a WrestleMania that appears to have quite a few main events. So it's a good way to tell this story, and it's a good way to draw some sympathy on Drew McIntyre as the returning challenger for the World Championship. Lashley, for his part, has been, you know, sort of respectful of Drew's journey and acknowledges that he's been a solid champion, but he's also quick to sort of point out his superiority and sort of buy into that almighty gimmick. So I thought on the whole they did a pretty solid job tonight of raising the stakes and raising my level of interest in this match. It still doesn't feel quite like a WrestleMania main event to me, but they got a little closer than they were.
Yep. Very good. I'll express my gripe so I don't forget, and then we'll introduce the show and get to calls. My gripe is, why did Baron Corbin get to take Drew's spot at WrestleMania if he won?
Yeah.
So MVP puts out an informal bounty. They won't use that word. They couldn't find a good euphemism, so they said a challenge. But it was essentially a bounty. Take out Drew, incapacitate him before WrestleMania, and whatever. Like, MVP and Lashley have the authority to then grant a replacement for Drew? It's just ridiculous. It's ludicrous. It's absurd. And WWE just sort of – it's one thing for Lashley to say it. It's one thing for Corbin to claim it. I would be upset if nobody contradicted it. But to have, like, the official WWE interview guy be like, you know, this is going to – or maybe it was Mackenzie Mitchell, but, you know, if Corbin wins, then he takes Drew's spot. It's like – they just, like – it's like if you say – it's like in politics. If you say a lie, like, seven times publicly, people start to believe anything because they just hear it enough and they assume, well, someone would have pushed back by now if it weren't true. So it's probably true. And that's sort of what it felt like here. So – I thought that was just dumb. Like, I want Tom Phillips to say, no, if Corbin wins, he doesn't get to take Drew's spot. We don't know what we'll do. We'll have an announcement. But Corbin doesn't even work here. He works on SmackDown. He's trying to collect some sort of de facto, like, bounty. And it's crazy. Yes, he gets a match. Drew wanted a match. But if he wins, no, he doesn't automatically get the main event WrestleMania. You have to win the Royal Rumble or do something, you know, legal to do that. Like, whatever. You know, choose your words. There should be pushback. I want authority figures and lead announcers with common sense and just calling out heels for absurd notions.
Yeah, it was dumb, and it wasn't just dumb. It was counterproductive to sort of the hype of the show because it's creating this false drama that no one buys into. I mean, there isn't a single person, I would wager, sitting at home that is believing that there's a chance that they're going to swap to Bobby Lashley versus King Corbin for the world title at WrestleMania. So with that in mind, that just means McIntyre is going to beat Corbin and we're going to be done with it. I don't think that there is any, you know, there's no sense in creating this false drama. You can accomplish the same thing and give the same match by just having Lashley place the unofficial bounty on McIntyre's head, have Corbin accept it. You have the match. And you have Corbin lose clean, just as what happened tonight, without this thing hanging in the air of whether or not Corbin is going to replace Drew McIntyre at WrestleMania, because we all know he isn't.
Exactly. Yes. It's that extra layer. It's not only dumb, but it is actually counterproductive.
And really, too, I realize they had to fill time tonight, but King Corbin, I know that they're high on him and they utilize him in these spots frequently, but given the way that he's been booked over on SmackDown, he's just not a guy that should be going 12, 15 minutes on TV with Drew McIntyre, 6 days or 5 days, because it's Saturday, before McIntyre challenges for the world title at WrestleMania. And I feel the same way about Cedric Alexander against Bobby Lashley. I mean,
yeah.
Alexander's great, but man, he got a lot of offense there. I just don't think it's conducive to either of these guys going into this title match.
Yeah, match length is established as having some sort of meaning. And it was, you know, one of my arguments about what they did with Christian in his first TV mm-hmm. match in AEW. And it's like, Kaz is a nice hand. You know, I mean, he's a good worker. I've been a fan of his work for 15 years, but he's not a guy that if you last 15 minutes against, it's like this, whoa, he beat Kaz. Yeah, it took him 15 minutes. Yeah, and so it's not meant to be disrespect to Kaz to say that's not a way to make a sense of a dominant first impression. So, yeah, I get what you're saying there. I mean, yes, it did kind of come down to, well, we got TV time to fill, and we can have a good match, but having TV time to fill and wanting to have a good match just isn't a good reason to undercut kind of the killer instinct of not the killer, but the sense of momentum and dominance that a main event WrestleMania main event competitor has just days before the event.
Yeah. Just sort of like, I mean, imagine if going into the main event of WrestleMania on Saturday night, Drew McIntyre comes to the ring and they mention live on TV, well, Drew McIntyre just went 12 minutes with King Corbin on Raw, and then Lashley comes out and they're like, well, Lashley just went 8 minutes with Cedric Alexander on Raw, like, you're instantly cheapening your main event.
Yeah, yep. All right, let's pause and introduce ourselves. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. For Monday, April 5th, 2021, I'm Wade Keller, editor and publisher of the Pro Wrestling Torch Weekly Newsletter and pwtorch.com, and also host of several wrestling podcasts, including the Daily Wade Keller Hotline, just for VIP members, and The Fix with Todd Martin, Everything with Rich Fan, post-pay-per-view roundtables. We'll be doing those just for VIP members this weekend after WrestleMania, Saturday night and Sunday night. And then also host of these free shows, which are ad and commercial-free for our VIP members, the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show and Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast. I am joined by Brandon LeClair of PWTorch.com, former SmackDown TV Alt Perspective reporter for PWTorch.com, now offering his take and detailed rundown of WWE pay-per-views. Brandon, welcome back to the closed chair, and welcome to a rare Monday appearance from you.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Glad to be here. I am glad to be back. It's been, I think, a little over a month now. I thought it was going to be much longer. I went on quite the journey with my employment, where I was a victim of the pandemic in more ways than one, in the sense that I lost my job, started a brand new career, absolutely hated it for a number of reasons. Corporate culture is not for me, and luckily, I received a call from my former employer who was rebounding now that we're starting to climb out of COVID, and I jumped at the opportunity to return, not only so that I could return to my previous job and you know, hate my work a little less, but also return to a schedule that would afford me the opportunity to do things that I like to do, which includes writing for the Torch and appearing on these post shows. So I am happy to be back.
Well, I mean, the most important thing is you get to be a co-host again here. I mean, I know, happiness in your full-time job is one thing, but no, that's great news, and it's great that you can be back on these on a semi-regular basis or a regular basis again and join us. And it's good to get your perspective on Raw. How did it feel to cover or to prepare yourself for a post-show but not have to do live coverage?
So I mean, like back when I first started doing these post shows with you, I was more rotating through the shows. So I had done it before. Like I'd done the prep for Raw without actually having to write prior to. But it's a little bit different. I find myself having to watch in a different way, because usually with SmackDown, when I was doing those post shows, it's like I'm covering the show in so much detail that I don't need notes, because it's fresh in my mind. I've just written thousands of words on it. And now it's like I'm just watching the show. And, of course, this is the biggest week of the year for wrestling fans. It's like I'm dedicating pretty much every night of the week this week. It's crazy. It was a little interesting. A little bit of scrambling there at the end. anyone in the Northeast, we lost cable and internet through all the Northeastern states. If you're a Spectrum customer, and it was a little rocky there for a moment, but we pulled through and we're back, and I was glad to be able to watch the show live and come back for my first post show in a while.
Excellent. Well, let's give out the phone number and welcome callers to join us in this conversation. You can give us a call at 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. When you call, if you want to join us on the show here, just push 1 on your keypad. That will flag you on the switchboard, so we know you want to be on the show. You can always just call, listen through your phone, and decide as the show progresses if there's a reason that you want to ask a question or respond to something that we said or a caller said. So if you've already called up, feel free to push 1 at any time along the way. You should be added
You should be flagged at that point and added to our caller queue. So speaking of callers, let's get to it. First up today is area code 802. 802, go ahead and state your name and where you're calling from.
Wade and Brandon, Nick from Brattleboro, Vermont. Congratulations, Brandon, on getting getting your job back. Believe me, I know how that feels.
I appreciate it. Yeah, it's,
trust me, I know how that feels. Anyway, I agree with you. Basically, the show was totally serviceable tonight. I think they might want to go to tape shows all the time. Because it's like, you know, everything kind of fit together much better than the backstage segments. Obviously, they probably retaped several of them. Because I'll bet you that Riddle ran into Mustafa and Sheamus the first time he tried that. Because he really zipped through the needle there. But I do have a couple of nits to pick. And one of which I feel bad for you, Wade, and I feel bad for Greg Parks because I noticed today that they're starting the pay-per-views at 8 o'clock now.
Yeah, yes.
And they added two more matches. So we're looking at, I would assume we're looking at 11:30 minimum for the end, for them to end.
I've heard that they're aiming for, you know, 3.5, give or take, 3:45 in terms of length. I'm – so, you know, 8 Eastern, so, yeah, 11:30. I mean, that's about right. I mean
– oh, that's right. You're out in the Midwest.
I'd rather
there.
The show – well, yeah, for us, so it would be 7 Central to about 10:30 or so, you know, maybe close to 11. I'm okay with that, especially for WrestleMania. My issue, if it started at 6 Central – 7 Eastern and went 4.5 hours, that I have an issue with in terms of how late it, you know, it's not just time it ends. It's also just how long you're asking people to, you know, to settle in and hold their attention. But I think the matches are big enough. And I'm fine with three, you know, I really am fine for WrestleMania being two shows that run around 3.5 hours. If it's a little, you know, if it's a little less, that's a bonus. If it's a little more, I'm not going to be, you know, too upset about it, but the later start time to me actually was a sign of confidence. They're not going to try to make the show each night go 4+ hours because, you know, that would be ridiculous.
Wait, is this a permanent change or was this specifically for WrestleMania?
I don't know. I don't know if it's permanent at all. So I'm not even sure what they're doing in terms of a kickoff show because I don't think they plugged anything like that tonight.
Well,
I assume – oh, go ahead, yeah.
If they are doing a kickoff show, I know that they're explicitly avoiding showing the venue. So,
right.
If they do any sort of kickoff show, I assume it would just be like pre-taped in the studio or something.
Exactly, yeah. They're not going to have matches. You know, I talked about it on a couple shows over the last week that, you know, being the first match out when they go live to the building,
that's
supposed to be a moment. And whoever that first ring entrance music is, and I assume it'll be Bianca Belair or Drew McIntyre, or, of course, Shane McMahon. you know, somebody will be the first to walk out in front of a live crowd. If they want Shane to get booed really loud and, you know, make it a big deal, I could honestly see them doing that. But Rich Fan dared on Everything with Rich Fan, a VIP audio show I host every week with Rich Fan. He dared to suggest Shane Braun might be the main event of Night 1 of WrestleMania, not Belair, Sasha, not Drew challenging last week. And I told him that I'm tempted to just end the show right there with such awfulness.
Before we move away from the time thing, one of the things that I wanted to point out too is I think what Peacock decides to do with the pay-per-views in sorts of timing is going to be interesting going forward because you have to remember that these pay-per-views run up against Sunday Night Football in the fall and that's an NBC property. So you wonder if they want to. By starting it at 8 o'clock, see, it's hard. Either way, if you start the show at 7, you get people who can at least watch the first hour and a half or so before potentially swapping over to Sunday Night Football. But if you start it at 8, a lot of people are going to like that better because they can finish the late afternoon games, which they can't do with the shows at 7. So you're trading off either way.
I wouldn't be surprised if they, during football season, switch to Saturday. I mean, Peacock is NBC. You know, and it could be that they're switching to 8. It could just be for WrestleMania, but maybe there's something on the NBC network that they don't want to conflict with. You know, who knows? Who has the Masters this year? Because that's this weekend.
You're definitely asking the wrong person.
I think CBS has the Masters.
Oh, okay.
Always.
Okay. No, because and that may be something, too. They didn't want to cut into the Masters. You know, they didn't want to have to go up against the Masters. And one thing, Wade, I was wondering from you is, and I know you've got, you know, Nielsen rating sources, and I actually call my friends every once in a while back at Nielsen to find out information, too, but... Is there? I am really curious to see what their, and it's not a buy rate, but what kind of reception they get on Peacock. What is? And I gotta believe that if they get 2 million people watching on Peacock, they're gonna publicize that, because that's huge.
Yeah.
But I'm like so curious as to, and of course that's all proprietary information, you know, unless you've got someone who leaks it. But I'd be real interested on that. Just getting to the show itself, I'm a little scared for Rhea Ripley. I'm a little worried about what Vince is going to end up doing with her, because.
Yeah.
Okay, it's been 3 weeks now, and she really hasn't, you know, she did a little bit of it at the contract signing, but it's like she's doing the sneer, you know, kind of tough girl, but very little character development, and she was so good at that at NXT. And I'm just a little concerned.
Yeah, Brandon, what do you think of the choice to make Ripley a heel coming in? Is it just because she's not blonde and shaped like half the women in the tag team scramble match? Is it because of circumstances of, well, Lacey got pregnant, Charlotte had her issues, and it was just sort of last-second thing, and they felt turning Asuka didn't make sense or wouldn't work, so it's more circumstantial, and they can always turn her again? Well, what's at play here, and is it okay or a mistake, or are you kind of thinking, no, it's actually a good move. Let Ripley have kind of an edge to her so she doesn't have to smile and be all nice at the beginning, too. I mean, you could, with a straight face, make any of those arguments, I think, but I know I have a leaning.
Yeah. I think that there's definitely some scrambling, in the sense that they had their plan. I think we know it was Evans and Charlotte. I initially thought, you know, before Charlotte contracted COVID, I really thought that they were going to just move the title off of Asuka onto Charlotte and do the rematch with Rhea Ripley. That was sort of my expectation. And obviously plans change. And you know, Charlotte was no longer available, and their original opponent for Charlotte, Lacey Evans, was no longer available. So we get this sort of shoehorn match between Rhea Ripley and Asuka. I don't get the sense necessarily that they were looking to do any like major turn here. Like Rhea Ripley's turn didn't so much come off as a turn more than it was just she kind of debuted as this flat character looking for a title shot, and then by default sort of worked her way into a heel role. I don't think that that's good news for her going forward. I think this is quickly becoming another example of a very, very strong female character in NXT being almost immediately, not necessarily defined down, but almost dumbed down personality-wise as soon as they get to the main roster. There's exceptions to that rule, of course, but I think we're seeing it happen with Ripley. I hope that we see more development with her going forward, especially if she's to win the title this weekend, because I think that's going to be really important in establishing a heel character for her. I'm of the mindset that she's talented enough to overcome it and that she could make it work, but my hopes aren't high out of the gate.
Yeah, I think it's tone deaf. I think she has a chance to be such a huge star, and I don't think she's as good as being a heel as a babyface. But I think it goes against what Vince McMahon thinks a babyface wrestler should be. I think it's a combination of all the factors in my question. You know, I do think it was circumstantial, and I do think that she is better as a babyface. And if it weren't for some of the storyline things happening, or some of the real life things happening to her storylines, she might have been brought in as a babyface. But I think Vince looks at her and says, you know, there's other people that I think I want to push as a face instead of her when I look at the totality of the roster. So, I mean, we'll see. I mean, what she did tonight could be seen as, hey, it's just getting a competitive edge and grabbing for the brass ring, you know, not participating faithfully with her partner during a TV match that was kind of thrown together before Mania. And it's not like she's done anything too unforgivable. And really, there's nothing unforgivable in WWE if you stick around long enough. So,
I don't think that anything that she's done has been outright heelish unless they come out and more or less tell us that she's a heel. I mean, anything that she's done could be said to have been done in the spirit of friendly competition, and I don't think is outside of the realm of what we would see Asuka necessarily do, even as a babyface. So they still have time to turn this around if they want to, and turn this title match into, you know, a respectful clash between these two female figures, and have, if Ripley comes off out on top and shakes hands with Asuka, whatever the case may be, they can set Ripley on a course to be a babyface going forward, but it feels like they're leaning in the heel direction.
Yeah. Yep. All right.
Can I fantasy book here for 1 second? Ripley beats down Asuka, wins the title, and then like kicks her in the face. You know, just goes full blown heel, and then Becky's music hits. She walks out and says, "That's my title, and I want it." And there you go. Mm-hmm. You've got a 3-month. You know, I don't know. I don't do Twitter and stuff. I have no idea if Becky's near coming back or whether she's ever coming back. She might love being a mother, but I can see. I mean, talk about a WrestleMania moment. You know. But anyway, that's my fantasy booking.
That would be something. I mean, that would be in, you know, if there's some justification in retrospect, we go, hey, that worked out well, then great.
Because she could have done that with Charlotte too. I mean, if Charlotte had won,
yeah.
You know, I mean, it's all there, you know, but, you know, as I said, as I don't follow Twitter, so I have no idea if she's been tweeting or dropping hints or anything. The other, I have two other nits to pick, and one is Baron Corbin does that slide out of the ring, run around the post, slide back in, and do an armbar, right? And the announcers are constantly saying, "Oh, they researched that move, you know, about every other wrestler in the world. Why don't these guys know? Oh, I'm just going to stand here and kick him in the face when he comes in the ring."
it's a lot like the Dean Ambrose fall through the ropes clothesline that thankfully he's gotten rid of in AEW. It's one of those things that it's just too slow to actually be effective. Like every single time the opponent has a chance to capitalize and turn the momentum in their favor. And when they don't, they look dumb.
You know, they always have their back turned and then just happen to turn around as he delivers the arm smash, whatever you call it, the clothesline.
One of my least favorite things to write in my reports for PW Torch whenever Corbin does that, and I'm just like, how do I describe this? Like Corbin's like corner run clothesline, like I don't know.
Just call it the Corbin. Just we can name it. We'll name it the Corbin.
Yeah, really.
My last thing is Riddle. The guy is such a good worker in the ring. He was, you know, he had a great match with Sheamus. He was throwing some really convincing punches against Mustafa tonight. He, you know, obviously works really hard, you know, throws his body all over the place, and then they have him ride down to the ring on a freaking scooter. And it just, it just irritates me so much. And don't, you know, and his whole...
Let me...
Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Oh no, I was going to say, Brandon, where are you on Riddle? Is this going to be Vince gets the last laugh because Riddle is like this comedy figure and we write him off as, you know, like I say, he's on the Restore Your Dignity tour on his scooter and it just, he digs a deeper hole each week. Or is he endearing himself to the real WWE fans who Vince McMahon actually caters to, for better or for worse, who are actually ultimately going to, as long as they protect Riddle somewhat in the ring or slowly rebuild him with credible performances and a strong U.S. title reign, can he actually come out of this where Vince goes, ha-ha, told you so. You know, he's a stoner and he's a goof and he comes up with these weird ideas behind the scenes when he's high and we made fun of it for 6 months and it turned him into a bigger star. It's like when Terry Taylor tried to defend the Red Rooster by going, it was a good gimmick because that's what everybody remembers about me. And I counter, yes, but they saw you as a lower mid-card joke and that's why they remember it and you had much more potential. I'm not trying to load my question up because I'm not sure where Riddle falls on that, but being memorable doesn't necessarily mean you're reaching your potential. Yeah, exactly, yes. So, Brandon, you're left.
I'm going to hedge a little bit, and I'm doing that because we just don't know because we don't have the crowd reaction.
Yeah.
It's one of the things that I'm so curious. There's honestly, I was thinking this while watching Raw tonight. The real main event, the real story about WrestleMania this weekend is the crowd. It's how does the crowd react? Who's over? Who's not? Who are we just miles off on? Who are we right about? I mean, it's all so fascinating, and it's one of the things I'm most looking forward to seeing throughout the weekend. And Riddle, I think, is one of those really interesting cases. He could be doing these things, and I'm just rolling my eyes thinking, like, man, this guy could be a serious world title contender. And for all I know, the audience could be laughing, I mean, uproariously. Like, we just don't know.
And maybe they're laughing,
yeah,
and you're rolling their eyes, but they don't see him as they see him as entertaining comedy relief, but
right.
He's R-Truth. He's Santino.
Right.
He's Peyton Royce. But he's not someone – then they see him as his U.S. title reign as a joke because of the things you're rolling your eyes. They enjoy him, but it also is capping his potential, and that's certainly a distinct possibility.
Yeah, and I do probably lean toward that right now. I mean, granted, you can make the case that Riddle is obviously more effective and more serious in the ring than any of those other characters, but – It doesn't necessarily mean that there isn't a ceiling on him with this gimmick. And I think that there is, the same way that there was a ceiling with Rob Van Dam. I mean, Rob Van Dam got his spots here and there in the main event, and he had the crowd behind him. But Van Dam was, you know, had that stoner gimmick reputation, and he was far less comedic than Riddle is. For him to have only sniffed the main event makes me wonder if Riddle really has a chance of getting to that level. I will say, when I watched Riddle coming to the ring tonight, the first thing that I thought of, and in terms of, you know, scale of importance, the United States title and the Intercontinental title are supposed to be equals, so to speak, between Raw and SmackDown. And Big E, for all the faults that we've had with his character being too comedic, I don't know about you, but when I look at those two champions, Big E feels mountains more important than Riddle.
Absolutely. No doubt about that for me either, and I think that's the case with the majority of viewers. Nick, back to you. Anything else you want to add?
I'll just leave you with a question that you can either discuss or put on the shelf and discuss in one of the VIP shows this week. Based on who they've got either already in the main mix or potentially eventually bring up some new – not bring up, but, I mean, develop new stars, who do you think has a better chance – because of their potential opponents between Drew and Bobby of winning that match. And with that, I will leave you and wish you all a great week and chat with you later.
Cool. Thanks, Nick. Always good to hear from you. Thank you. Brandon, well, yeah, well, go ahead, take that. What do you think?
Yeah, I'm hesitant to say, hey, get the title off of Bobby Lashley and get it back on Drew McIntyre, just because for me this is the first time in his entire career that I'm enjoying Bobby Lashley. And that extends back a little bit, you know, toward it, back into the U.S. title run and when the Hurt Business was really firing on all cylinders. It's not just since he won the world title, but this is the first time that I've really taken Lashley seriously and really felt like he is bringing something to the table in a main event way, in a main event mm-hmm. situation. So it's hard for me to say just rip the title off him and get it back on Drew, but by the same token, it feels like Drew can't lose this match because it's his first opportunity as a main eventer in front of a crowd. And it feels like this is what the Drew McIntyre story has been building toward. They've been trying to get him to a point where he has his crowning moment in front of a crowd. And this is the first opportunity to really do it. As far as post-Mania options for opponents, I think that Lashley is probably a little bit easier to book for just because McIntyre's been champion for the better part of the last year, so he's sort of run through the gamut of opponents. But at the same time, I don't think that there's a lot of depth for Lashley right now either because the Raw roster has been spread really thin and has really been cycled through. They're going to have some sort of movement among the brands or some call-ups for either McIntyre or Lashley to have viable challengers getting into SummerSlam.
No, it feels that way, and I threw it to you because I don't have a good answer. I mean, they've lined everybody up for WrestleMania, and they've got a full card. But who on the Raw roster is going to be in any position to be credible against Drew mm-hmm. McIntyre after this? You have... You know, Damian Priest is new, but he's a babyface. Braun Strowman is being positioned against Shane as a babyface. Matt Riddle, a babyface, not ready to be a top guy. Keith Lee dealing with, you know, reportedly some mystery health issue that he's trying to get cleared for, but it kept him out of Mania. Is he healthy enough now where there'll be a big angle with him at or right after Mania as a heel, and he's Drew's next opponent? That seems right. Most likely if he's cleared. If you look at the heel side, AJ Styles is in a tag team, and he's, you know, gone back and forth with Drew, but they've done that. Randy Orton, been there, done that. Sheamus, been there, done that. Who else is there? It's
the
like,
Fiend.
Yeah, that's
plug
the thing.
The Fiend end either way.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, it does the Fiend become the SummerSlam opponent for Drew? And is Keith Lee a bridge to get there? There's not really a bridge otherwise. I mean, it's like Tucker or Angel Garza or a Slapjack repackaged, Mace T-Bar, somebody from Retribution, I should say, repackaged. Or just rematches with Lashley for 2 months before they get to Fiend. You know what I mean? I don't know. Nothing jumps out. So that's where Brandon, the brand split makes more sense. Or the trading somebody from SmackDown makes more sense. Yeah,
right.
I don't know who that would be either.
I don't know.
You know?
Well, here's the issue, and here's why we got to this avenue and why we're in with this conundrum in the first place. Because WWE's had this full year of running through challengers for Drew McIntyre while simultaneously not doing a great job of building their undercard to be the next person in line. Now, usually they're able to get away with that because come Mania season, they've got a part-timer or a big challenger that's coming in and taking that spot. So let's just say, for example, that this year we had a rematch between Drew McIntyre and Brock Lesnar for the world title. Well, then guess what? You've got 3 months of Bobby Lashley afterward. But we're getting to the Bobby Lashley match now at WrestleMania. So, I mean, can you stretch it a couple more months? Sure. But it still leaves you a couple months short to get to SummerSlam.
Yep. Absolutely. So, I mean, I'm curious. I'm less eager to get past WrestleMania this year than in past years because I don't feel like the WrestleMania build has dragged. I've actually thought it's been, you know, we've sort of gone, are they going to make this seem like WrestleMania? There's some debate, does it feel like a WrestleMania? You know, you forgive for COVID to a certain extent. There's some missteps, the thing. But part of it is I just don't have anything waiting on the other side that I'm feeling like, let's get to that because they haven't built well. So I hope Vince doesn't wake up Monday morning and go, oh, crap.
Yeah. I have a really sort of love-hate relationship with this build for WrestleMania, because on one hand, I want to commend them in a way for playing the hand that they're dealt and actually working with the talent they have in the building on a week-to-week basis.
Yep.
Because we've been begging for that for years. We've been begging for a WrestleMania centered around the stars of today that you have in the locker room. So on that hand, I commend them, and I look forward to that talent getting a chance to display what they've got on this massive stage over the course of two nights, where they all should have plenty of time to work and showcase their talent. On the other hand, I still want to admonish WWE, because we all knew that this day would come eventually, and we all said that they needed to prepare better for it, and they didn't.
Yes. Yep. Well put. All right. Our number, if you want to give us a call, we're still accepting phone calls, 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. If you call, push 1 on your keypad. If you're not listening to our live stream of the show, we invite you to do so. If your time is really limited, you can email us and say, hey, can you bring me on earlier, not later in the show? If you're not in a hurry, don't do that, because, you know, we don't want everyone jumping ahead in line. But if that's the only way that you can really make it work because of a work schedule or your sleep schedule, feel free to do that. Just email wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. You can also participate in the show via email by sending an email to wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. The way to find our live stream, by the way, is at wadekellerpostshow.com. You can click on the live stream link. We also have a live stream link at pwtorch.com at the top of our desktop page. Maybe the best way is just to go to our My Raw Report or My Dynamite or SmackDown Report and click on the link at the top and bottom of My TV Report. That'll take you right to the live stream. And also on Twitter, at pwtorch. I almost always tweet out the phone number and a link to the direct stream for that episode shortly before each of those shows, Monday, Wednesdays, and Fridays end. So we love to hear from new callers. We love to hear from some old callers. There's certainly some people we haven't heard from in a while who might be joining us or might be listening but not participating, whether that's Mark or Adam or Tim or Seth or Alex or Dave or I'm trying to think of other names who haven't heard from in a while. So give us a call, you know, if you've been a caller in the past. We'd love to hear your voice. All right. So let's get to it, and we'll go next to 864 just chimed in, and we're going to go to them. Go ahead, 864. State your name and where you're calling from.
Hey, man, it's Charles from Herndon, Virginia, like right outside of D.C.
Ah, cool. Good to hear from you, Charles. Thanks for pushing one and joining us. What'd you think of Raw? What stood
out? Yeah, man, I didn't know. Like, I just hopped on, like, 30 seconds ago. I didn't know I was going to be like the first person you call on me.
Well, here's the thing. You're getting me in trouble with the regular callers who are on hold, but I saw a fresh number. I'm like, let's not make this guy wait. But don't rub it in, you know, that you got to jump ahead in line.
Oh, my bad. Like, I've been like a subscriber for like 5 or 6 years, but like, you know, like it ebb and flows and like, you know, whatever. All I wanted to say, I just wanted to make a quick comment. It was like, I'm going to WrestleMania for once. I'm going to WrestleMania both nights on Saturday and Sunday. So if you need a correspondent, if you don't have anybody else, like, I'll help you out. So that's the one thing. And what I really called you in about is like, I don't think WWE's WWE's not aware about like how the fans are going to react for the first live event.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm thinking in my head that. I know me personally, because I'm upset about how they did the Hurt Business last week. I think Drew McIntyre might get booed heavily at WrestleMania.
Because
so that's just my question.
We
just all want to
show support. And you think that's because it'll be actually in protest of Hurt Business breaking up, so people cheer Lashley as a way to get back at Vince, essentially?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, earlier today I chatted with Rich Fan for Everything with Rich Fan, a VIP exclusive podcast that we usually do on Sundays, but we happen to do it on Monday this week because of Easter. And Rich had some strong editorial comments about the breakup of Hurt Business. I feel it was a mistake to break them up. It felt short-sighted. Like everything, I like to do that. It's a caveat. It's not a cop-out, but it's worth saying. Sometimes things work out, and we don't understand why at the beginning. And I'm just humble enough to say that happens sometimes. I'm also a realist. This is Vince McMahon, who has a track record of short-term hotshot booking. He also has a track record of maybe not valuing a faction or a wrestler in the same way that our caller Charles does, that I do, and so many people have expressed as far as Hurt Business being one of these like factions that I won't say Vince stumbled into it, but I think it became more popular and more cool than had anything to do with him. And to break it up, I don't know if it's in defiance of it got more popular than he wanted or if there's other things at play. My hunch is we're not going to see something in the next few months that justifies the breakup. I think Shelton and Cedric are going to be in a worse spot than they would be if they were kept strong with Hurt Business. We'll see. Brandon, your thoughts on that and how it might affect the reaction to Drew, this poor innocent bystander, where Lashley maybe gets cheered as a protest against Hurt Business breaking up.
Yeah, I absolutely think that breaking up the Hurt Business at this stage of the game was a poor decision. It felt like a way to give Lashley some distractions and some things to do on his road to Drew McIntyre and to make it feel like he was dominant in the sense that he didn't need anybody, that he and MVP don't need anybody by their side, so they're able to shed the dead weight in Cedric Alexander and Shelton Benjamin and then let Lashley kind of tear them apart in the weeks leading up to WrestleMania. I think that's what they were going for. I don't think that it worked, and I don't think that it benefits Lashley, and I think it hurts Benjamin and Alexander significantly. They were a really cool group, which is something that WWE has a hard time doing, is creating something that is sort of genuinely cool and that they're not trying to force. And I think the Hurt Business had found their groove in that. I do think that it could lead to a negative reaction and that Drew McIntyre could be the unfortunate beneficiary of that, the opposite of a beneficiary, I guess. I think that it may affect him. And I mentioned this earlier, that's the thing that I'm most excited about is to see where these reactions come from and what they look like. And for all we know, maybe Drew McIntyre would get booed anyway. Maybe his babyface run hasn't connected. Maybe they think that he's being shoved down people's throats the way that Roman Reigns was as a babyface. You know, I don't feel that way personally, but I can't speak for the fans. So
I would think a promo like tonight from Drew is what – I want to point this out. Like, Roman never did. Go-home promo,
sure.
That babyface promo by a challenger or champion going into a pay-per-view main event – And I do think that was something. Like, Drew is a massive wrestling fan. He wanted this, and he pursued it. Roman went on record going, yeah, I'd rather play football, but only in the NFL, because I don't want to ride those buses and stay at those cheap hotels. That wasn't for me. So I decided to get into my family business, building furniture, before I thought maybe I'll try this wrestling thing that my family tells me was kind of fun but never really interested me. Like, I'm only slightly caricaturizing his path, and that's the story he's told in his own words. Not every fan knows that, but it came across, and it makes his heel character so good. I would take Roman Reigns. I said this even before his heel run. It was my number one overall draft pick because I thought he had this great heel potential. It's not an I told you so. It's just a fact. I was consistently saying this guy's going to be a great wrestling heel. Drew is so different than Roman. I would be surprised. It wouldn't be a rejection of Drew. It would be a rejection of Vince McMahon's booking if you always by default boo whoever he chooses to push the most as a babyface. And I think that would be unfair for Drew. And it would also be unfair for Drew if he pays the price for the Hurt Business being broken up prematurely. However, Lashley's done really good work. MVP's done really good work. And I don't want to take away the possibility that, hey, Drew, we like you, but Lashley and MVP are sort of the prizes of the last 6 months. And we just want to kind of – we're the wrestling fans who go to WrestleMania. We want to do something that makes a difference. And we actually think cheering Lashley and MVP is maybe that's part of what Charles is getting at. That's a way we can make more of a difference than just cheering the prescribed lead babyface.
Yeah, and I think that there is intrigue in seeing a character who maybe didn't connect before do the best work of their career. And I think that's what we're seeing from Bobby Lashley. I mean, I don't recall a time where Bobby Lashley was really, really over. I mean, you could maybe point to the hair versus hair match at WrestleMania 23, but I don't remember that match having a ton of fan interest, you know, diehard fan interest. Of course, there was the mainstream interest because of Donald Trump and Vince McMahon, but Lashley felt overpushed to me then, and I didn't feel like he was receiving the crowd reactions that justified his position on the card, and I don't think that ever really changed. So the first time that Lashley has truly lived up to the potential and really what the company saw in him all those years ago has been on this Hurt Business run, and he's never been in front of an audience doing it. So it's going to be really interesting. I mean, maybe they cheer them both. I don't know. It's so hard.
Yep. Yep. All right. Charles, anything else that you want to bring up, either follow up to what we said or additional points?
I got one point. So just from my perspective, like I like Drew McIntyre. It's just like with like the Hurt Business coming, well, Drew, Bobby Lashley and the Hurt Business coming into their own, like over the last like 6 or 7 months, is like that. I feel like that is the that is like the faction and the character that's the most over right now. It's no offense to like Drew McIntyre. Like I feel like last year he got a bad shape because he was one of the most over characters, most over wrestlers from last year. But now it's like, I kind of feel like, yeah, maybe he should get that WrestleMania celebration with the fans, but at the same time, it's like it's I feel bad, but it's not your time right now, and that's just like the break. So
right.
Like, yeah. So that's it. So yeah. Like I said, like
all right, cool.
I know you do. Hold on. I know you do. Like, oh, you want to have correspondence and stuff at the event. So if you don't have anybody else, like,
yeah,
I'll volunteer. But if you find someone else, that's cool.
Yeah, Charles, email us. We do have other people who have emailed who are going. And by the way, I should say this. Somebody emailed today. If you're attending NXT in person in the pods or especially Daily's Place for AEW, if you're one of the people attending, we'd love to hear from you and bring you onto the show as an on-site correspondent. We dropped that a year ago for obvious reasons, but that was a staple of this show for years. It's just bringing somebody on who just attended live. They'd share details and what they saw that was off camera and talk about crowd response. That's going to be all the more fascinating once we get back to full crowds. And it is, I don't want to say imminent, but it seems, barring an unexpected setback or massive irresponsibility from people, inevitable within a handful of months here. We'd love to hear from you if you are going to any kind of a live wrestling event, especially a televised one we cover here on the post show. And the way to let us know that is WadeKellerPodcast@pwtorch.com. Just put on-site correspondent in the subject line with the show you're going to, and that'll help us stay organized and get back to you. So, Charles, feel free to email us as a backup, but I think we're set, but it really is nice to have a backup in case something comes up.
That's cool. Take care.
Yep, thanks. Appreciate it. All right, well, we'll go next to Jay from Hartford, and then on deck is 219, who just chimed in. Jay, welcome. Good to hear from you again.
Thank you, Wade. Good evening to you and Brandon. So first of all, real quick, shout out to Charles, who just called in, because usually every year my family and I, we travel around Easter time, and one of the places we have family and frequent is Herndon, Virginia. And so obviously we didn't go this year for, you know, reasons,
cool.
Right, pandemic and all that.
Awesome.
And so Charles calls the day after Easter and says, hey, I'm from Herndon. So I just got a kick out of that. But anyway, like, cause how often do people talk about Herndon, right? So
not very often in my life.
Exactly, really. So, yeah. And I'm also kind of, I have the same sentiment as him as far as the Drew McIntyre, Bobby Lashley thing and the Hurt Business. And I am just like torn up about the Hurt Business's breakup. I thought they were super over. And I've been hoping, and I guess as the weeks go by, it seems less likely, but I've been thinking, you know, they went through the whole, they're banned from ringside thing. I'm like, could this be some sort of ploy to say, oh, they were banned from ringside, we didn't think they'd interfere, and they show up inside with Lashley somehow. But maybe they've gone too far for that, or is that some sort? Because I just feel as though they're too over, and they were too well over. Is you know, there were no crowds, right? But I feel like it was so good and such a highlight of the show. The breakup doesn't really. I don't see that. It's not making sense to any of us. Like.
Yeah.
What do you think of the possibility that this is some sort of setup and they end up back with Lashley?
Brandon, is there any hope for that? I mean, it seems like with what happened the last 2 weeks, that'd be tough to make seem believable. You know, I think maybe we are too far past that now.
I like it. I mean, I like the idea of them sort of pulling the wool over everyone's eyes and staging this setup where, you know, it does make sense that Adam Pearce may announce that Alexander and Benjamin were banned from ringside to ensure a fair title match so that the Hurt Business then go ahead and stage this breakup so that the stipulation doesn't get added. You'd have to do a lot of legwork, storytelling-wise. You would have to make sure that MVP is out there cutting a promo the following night on Raw to clarify that, you know, he saw this coming. He saw it coming that Adam Pearce would ban the rest of the Hurt Business from ringside, and he couldn't have that happen. So by way of avoiding that, he staged this breakup. I think that you could get away with that had they not done the last 2 weeks of TV, but where Lashley just destroyed Alexander. And granted, I mean, Alexander put up a fight and the match went longer than it probably should have, but regardless of that, I think with how aggressive and dominant and vicious Lashley was, it's going to be really hard to make that case. So I don't know that they could pull it off, but I like the idea in theory for sure.
I'm kind of with you guys. It seems very unlikely, but it's just that desire to have them back together. Like, and so here's the thing, Wade. Like, you know, you have a year of no crowds, and I think there are a lot of things that worked, like the Hurt Business drew as a face, as a champion. And then, you know, when the crowds come back is when you decide to, you know, do this weird booking, you know, like, so I have no idea, you know, as a black guy, right, I'm super excited to see Lashley as champion, but I really enjoyed Drew's reign, and I was looking for him to have his moment with the fans, and so this is really tough to, I don't know, I guess I'm happy with whoever wins and, you know, sad about whoever loses. Like, I just don't know.
Yeah, no, there's a bunch of downsides and upsides to both.
Yeah.
And the fans could cheer both guys. You know, both guys could get cheered, and it might not be a traditional heel, or it's a 50-50 split, and both guys get a respectable reaction. Yeah, but go ahead, Brandon, with what you were saying.
Yeah, no, I was just mentioning that there's a downside and an upside to both aspects. I mean, like we kind of discussed earlier, it's hard to see where they're going as far as future challengers go for either guy. It's like we kind of said, it's a little bit easier to paint the Bobby Lashley picture than it is Drew McIntyre, just because McIntyre's had that run. But when you and I were doing it, just spitballing, it was hard to even come up with challenges for Lashley without making significant changes to the roster at the main event level. So they're going to have some work to do either way coming out of WrestleMania. But yeah, I think that they're going to be making some concessions regardless of who they choose to win this match, because if McIntyre wins, then you're really, really putting a halt on Lashley's momentum that he has clearly created for himself over the last several months. And if Lashley wins, then you're kind of sending the message that, you know, Drew McIntyre had his year with no crowds, but we just don't think he's the guy. So it's a tough call.
Yeah. Go ahead, Angel.
Sure. Last thing, and I'll let you guys go get more callers in if you need to. Bad Bunny. So I actually enjoyed him tonight, and I thought that he's been pretty good, because I don't follow his music and I don't know as much about him, you know, outside of what I've seen on Raw. His promo tonight, I really liked. It went a little long, but it still was very enjoyable, and he, you know, I wasn't sure his, you know, English isn't his first language, right? Obviously, but I wasn't sure how he has the English language down, right? But so was it just me? After the promo went so long, I thought that he just went into Spanish because, like, it was more comfortable.
He just wanted to express himself. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm like, okay, maybe he started.
We'll get the translation from Javier in a moment.
Okay, great. I can't wait. So, But I'm thinking, okay, he's, you know, maybe he's getting a little like, oh, man, I'm losing it. You know, the words aren't coming. But then when he moved back to the English and he was saying, and all of a sudden, you know, you for no reason hit me with a guitar. I'm like, this guy's good. Like, I really enjoyed the promo. Again, a little long-winded, but I enjoyed the promo.
Yep.
You know, they went with the classic mess up the expensive car thing. But, you know, it's wrestling. It works, right? So, you know, I'm excited for the and I'm shocked they made it a tag match. I thought they would leave it a single, but my casual fan wife goes, is he going to have any help? Is he going to have a partner? I'm like, no, it's one-on-one. And then they changed it. So I think it'd be fun. That's all I got tonight.
I thought it was a little suspicious. Thanks, Jay. Appreciate it. Always good to hear from you. So yeah, the car, it was, you know, water soluble paint. It'll wash off fine. And if you can afford a car, by the way, the car went up in value from $1 million to $2.6 million to $3 million over the course of the show. So I think they can afford a new paint job if they need to. They did not smash windshield. They did not knock off rearview mirrors. They did not tear off a door. So you know, even Miz and Morrison knew, you know, maybe they ought to be a little careful with how much damage they do. So, but to the more serious point, Bad Bunny's long form promo and then the news, maybe the biggest, if not only significant news item of the show of any kind is, you know, the confirmation of what I thought would be the match at the beginning, you know, weeks ago before they made a one-on-one, which was Priest being in the match and making it a tag match. I was a little, I don't say worried, but I was thinking, are they going to act like Bunny's too injured to wrestle because he's getting cold feet or they can't insure him properly or he's got an attitude problem. They don't trust him. I mean, like, who knows what? You know, I was like, are they going to do a concussion storyline? And then they just announced, you know, the tag match. And I like that. It makes a lot more sense. And the fact is now it has a chance to be a good match. You know, Damian Priest is good.
Yeah.
Miz and Morrison are good. Bad Bunny's a novelty, just like Amos is a novelty. But it's another match that has actually a chance to be, like, good and not just a novelty. Brandon, your thoughts on all that?
Yeah, absolutely. I was, like you, thinking from the get-go that it was clearly a tag match from the start. I mean, really, this match, if you go back, I mean, this match was the first match for the WrestleMania card. I mean, it wasn't officially confirmed, but the second Bad Bunny showed up and hooked himself with Damian Priest and started having these issues with Miz and Morrison, I mean, we're talking like the week after the Royal Rumble. So at that point, we were already talking about that being a WrestleMania match, realistically. So this is sort of the oldest match on the card, and it sort of surprised me that they ever announced it as a singles. I think maybe that was just sort of a reaction to the fact that I think a lot of people just predicted it from the get-go, that they were headed in this direction. So I was happy to see it get changed to a tag team match. I think, like you said, it gives it the actual ability to be a solid match. You've got three really, really good workers in there. And I expect Bad Bunny to surprise people just because, you know, you can tell that he's a fan. You can tell that he's there and doing this for the right reasons. And I think that he will pull out a couple of moves that will probably impress people enough to make this a memorable encounter. I thought the promo tonight was fine, definitely a little bit long. I was a little put off at first by sort of the way he was delivering the lines about, you know, he just came here to perform his music at Royal Rumble. He didn't expect to get into this. It came off a little bit like a sob story to me, and I don't think that you want to put him in that role. But he brought it back. He brought it back around later in the promo, and I thought he came off pretty strong overall. I think the addition of Morrison and Priest is a welcome addition to the match. And yeah, the car angle was certainly something. WWE typically goes all out with their destruction of vehicles, but man, did they take it easy on this one.
Totally. I'm with you. I'm with both of you. I mean, I think it was a good promo in most places, a little long. A couple things I probably would have not said. But overall, I thought it you got to know him a little bit better, you know?
Yeah.
And I actually kind of, like, I could buy into him speaking from the heart. I don't know if it's the most relatable angle that a, you know, super rich, successful star had his $2.6 to $3 million car defaced with water-soluble paint, and now he wants revenge. Like, you know, it's they want to project him as a star. He wants to be projected as a star. But when you're driving up in a $3 million car, it's like on a pro wrestling show when you want pro wrestling fans to like you, it just doesn't feel particularly relatable. So,
right.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's also hard, too, because I think you have a segment of the audience that is sort of rejecting him just based on merit and the fact that this is sort of a trend in America in general. If you're a celebrity on a world stage, but you're not necessarily a celebrity in America, then there's heat there. There's resentment mm-hmm. there. And I think that there's definitely some resentment and some heat toward Bad Bunny because, yeah, despite being the most streamed artist in the world last year, beating out even the likes of Taylor Swift, who, you know, most would consider the biggest artist in the world, there's an expectation, I think, that you know who he is. And when you don't know who he is, I think a lot of people's gut reaction to that is not to look him up and figure it out, but instead to say, well, he can't be that big because I've never heard of him. You
yeah.
know, it's almost like a defense of their own knowledge of pop culture. Like they
or ignorance of, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. They can't acknowledge the blind spot that they have. And so it's an uphill battle for him with this audience. And it's interesting. He's another one. I'm really interested to see the kind of reaction that he gets at WrestleMania.
I'm a little, you know, with the trouble selling WrestleMania tickets, or at least, you know, over two nights with pretty heavy prices, sure. steep prices, you know, you'd think some people would be like, well, I want to go see Bad Bunny wrestle. If he was that, you know, that transformative and big of a star. And I bet WWE's a little disappointed that Bad Bunny fans aren't coming out to support him just to see him wrestle. And maybe tonight's promo was a move to you know, up the interest and investment that his fans have in what he's doing.
Yeah,
this weekend.
He doesn't strike me, and I could be completely wrong about this. But he doesn't strike me as the kind of artist who is drawing the fanfare that follows you through everything you do.
Yeah.
So when I say that, I mean like he's huge, undoubtedly, and he's huge across multiple platforms, across multiple countries, across multiple languages. But does he have the sort of dedicated fan base that, say, BTS does? Now, I have zero interest in BTS. They're, you know, a South Korean boy band. But they're huge. They're admittedly huge. They sell out stadiums all over the world, including the United States. If a member of BTS were wrestling at WrestleMania, their fans would be piling into that stadium. That's
yeah.
the kind of fan base that they
yeah.
have. If
yeah.
Taylor Swift were wrestling at WrestleMania, her fans would pile into that stadium.
Yeah.
But I don't see that Bad Bunny necessarily has that kind of following.
All right, let's go to – thanks, Jay, by the way, for your call. Let's go next to 219. It looks like Steve from Baltimore is up next, but he dropped off. Call back if you want, although we're running along here. But go ahead, 219, state your name and where you're calling from.
Hey, Wade and Brandon. This is Charlie from Chicago. How you guys doing?
I'm doing good, Charlie. Thanks for calling. Good to hear from Chicago. What
yeah.
do you think of Raw tonight?
So, you know, again, like you guys have covered the her business breakup and everything with Drew, and I've been pulling for Drew this past year, and I'm still with him on the baby with his baby face run, but I actually, you know, I think he's gonna get the belt back on Sunday, and then I'm hoping they have some good challengers for him after Mania, which brings me to my question. I actually wanted to ask if you guys had any thoughts about expectations for the Raw after Mania, in terms of maybe some new debuts. Personally, I don't think it will happen just because NXT is moving to Tuesdays, but I think, you know, Karrion Kross takes the belt from Finn. If O'Reilly beats Cole, I think it could be a decent time for Cole or Finn to come up to the main roster, possibly Raw. Wanted to see if you guys have any thoughts about that, or really anyone else that would be on your radar for a Raw after Mania or SmackDown after Mania debut. And then also if you had any hot takes on expectations for the Jericho Austin Broken Skull sessions. But yeah, that's it. Really enjoying the show.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Great. Thanks, Charles. Appreciate it. Or thanks, Charles. Yep. Okay. So the Raw After Mania, always fun, sometimes crazy and newsworthy, and other times just kind of fun because it's a reset button. I mean, there's a list of names. You know, Becky Lynch was brought up earlier in the show. Charlotte might be ready to go. Maybe she or Becky show up at WrestleMania. Yeah, I don't think the Raw After Mania is going to be like where a Becky Lynch or a Rock shows up. Like, that's not going to happen. But a Charlotte or a Becky could. There's some people on the sidelines we haven't seen. I mentioned Keith Lee earlier. If he's been cleared, but they just didn't want to, you know, force him on a Mania. Maybe he's a late entrant in the Andre Battle Royal and he wins. You know, something like that could happen where then he shows up and says, I won the Andre Battle Royal, and now, Drew, I want you. Something like that could happen. Or he just shows up on Raw and doesn't appear at Mania. His name is there. Aleister Black is, you know, Vince isn't high on him, but, you know, if he's desperate for a new opponent for Drew and thinks he can bring him in and elevate him, that comes to mind. And, yeah, the NXT options. You know, we keep talking about Karrion Kross being somebody who would get called up because he's, you know, just seems like so good for the main roster in terms of his strengths and weaknesses. You know, it seems like his strengths are a better fit for the main roster and his weaknesses aren't great for NXT. But I think Charlie brings up a good point. What about Finn Balor just being brought back as a babyface opponent for Roman, as a heel opponent for Drew, as a babyface opponent for Lashley? Maybe that would seem fresh again. And then Adam Cole, you know, he's always a talent that, I mean, it's tough with his size as a heel going against the two, you know, I like him as a babyface against Roman more than as a heel against Drew. I just think the size difference is too much. The way that WWE presents things and just sort of how regular people react to size differences. They generally, with some exceptions, side with, you know, it's tough to get as enthusiastic about Drew beating somebody up who's as so much smaller than him as Adam Cole would be. But anyway, so those are some of my thoughts, Brandon. Anybody else come to mind? Any reaction to the names I mentioned?
Yeah, I was kind of racking my brain trying to think of who's out there right now. Who do they have to bring up? And I'm drawing a blank aside from the names that you bring up. I mean, Keith Lee is certainly an option if he's ready to go. But he hasn't been gone that long. I don't feel like that would be a big moment, you know, sort of worthy of the post WrestleMania debut or return. Finn Balor, I don't know. I kind of almost get the feeling that Finn is sort of an NXT lifer now.
Yeah.
He kind of, it feels like he's at that stage in his career where that's where he wants to be and that's where he's comfortable. Karrion Kross, I think, makes a lot of sense if you have Balor sort of overcome the Giant at TakeOver and you move Karrion Kross onto the main roster. I think that he makes a lot of sense there, especially as an opponent for Drew McIntyre, if that's where you're headed. Adam Cole, I feel like we're all just perennially waiting for Adam Cole to get called up. And he's another guy who, at this point, I could see him just staying in NXT, given the size. That's the thing. I'm in full agreement with you. I think that making the case to make Adam Cole a heel on the main roster is going to be a really tough sell. And my fear is that if Adam Cole comes into the main roster as a heel, that he's not going to be able to get above that Intercontinental U.S. title level. Because I just don't think that Adam Cole as a heel against a babyface Drew McIntyre, aesthetically, I don't think it works. I don't think that you're going to be able to make it work. I think that Cole is going to look sympathetic no matter how you play that, and I think Drew's going to look like a bully. I just don't see how you make that work. Cole is really, really undersized, and I don't know that we'll really – I don't know that people are going to have noticed quite so much in NXT. They've been able to hide it in different ways and put him in scenarios that are really conducive to his strengths. But once he gets on that main roster, I think he really needs to be a babyface in order to really shine. And I don't know if they want to do that with him. So,
and I don't, if that was imminent, a call up as a babyface, I just don't think on national television you have him do what he's been doing on NXT.
Exactly.
Yeah,
that's sort of the issue. I mean, I guess you can call up Kyle O'Reilly, but again, here's the thing. Kyle O'Reilly, Adam Cole, with the blood feud that they're in right now, it sort of feels like one of them has to leave. So yeah. It feels like one of them has to go to the main roster. I guess I sort of lean toward it being Kyle O'Reilly, but I don't see him being a major impact player on the main roster.
I love Kyle O'Reilly.
Me too.
Yeah, I mean, and I hope he gets to have a chance to be on the main roster, and I hope he doesn't get, you know, saddled with a bad gimmick. And yet, what is Vince going to see when he sees Kyle O'Reilly? What's the hook? You know,
Daniel
with
Bryan.
You know, well, yeah, yeah, but
Daniel,
that was
Daniel Bryan
was,
without the charisma.
Although Kyle has a different kind of charisma. I defend him a little bit, but Daniel Bryan getting over was not Vince McMahon's idea, and
right,
he still resents it. So he's not going to go, "Hey, Kyle O'Reilly, be my next Daniel Bryan."
Right, and that's what I mean. Not a knock on Kyle in terms of the charisma, but I'm just saying that I find it less likely that Kyle O'Reilly would get over on his own to the point that Bryan did.
Yeah.
So when I say without the charisma, I mean without the natural backing of the crowd in the way that they got Daniel Bryan over, essentially.
Yeah. It's tough. I don't know where Kyle O'Reilly fits in on the main roster if it's not in a tag team. You know, if they just bring in Fish and O'Reilly as a tag team, and that's fine with me. As a singles guy, I think he'd get lost. So
yeah.
That worries me. That worries me a bit. So Jericho and Austin, I have not talked much about this. I'm anywhere on podcasts, but I'm obviously intrigued by it. It's a really interesting development. Kind of brave.
Very.
I mean, it's easy call for Jericho and AEW to let him do it. I think. I don't think there's anything that Jericho has to fear from Steve Austin on an interview. But for WWE to do it, it's eyebrow raising. And you know, is it a way to get WWE fans to go, I'm gonna pay attention to WWE again, and I'm gonna get Peacock, and you bring in some AEW fans. Like, what's your take on it, Brandon? I can't hear you. I don't know if you hit mute by mistake or your connection dropped. Brandon. I still cannot hear you, Brandon. I don't think it's me, but there's a way to find out. And so let's bring Javier into the conversation. Javier, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
But you can't hear Brandon.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you, Javier. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Oh, good. So, yeah, Brandon,
yeah, so,
not sure what happened, Brandon, but if you can fix your connection or something, let us know. Otherwise, Javier, go ahead. It looks like Brandon's going to try. Actually, hold on here. Let me do one thing. Maybe I can patch him back in here. Thanks, everybody listening live, for your patience. It's still calling, Brandon. So it looks like he's having it. Oh, no, there's Brandon. Hey, Brandon.
I was in mid-conversation, and I saw my little Wi-Fi symbol drop, and I was like, no.
Yeah, well, you're back. So
I'm on my hotspot.
Okay.
So let's hope. Let's hope for the best.
Yeah. So, yeah, I asked about Javier, hold on a second, okay, if you don't mind.
Yeah, go ahead.
Cool. Yeah, Brandon, just go ahead and comment on the Austin Jericho thing.
Yeah, so did you lose me before I said anything?
Yes.
Okay, so I said a whole bunch of stuff, and I was like, cool. All right, I'm really curious as to how this plays out. I think that you're going to – I think the goal here is to grab maybe some of the lapsed, not necessarily lapsed fans, but people who had a network subscription and are maybe just thinking like, I don't need to sign up for Peacock. I watch a couple pay-per-views here and there. WrestleMania doesn't look that interesting to me this year. I'll save my $5 or $10. I think they're trying to grab those people. I don't think that this happens without Peacock. I don't think that there's enough impetus on WWE's part and enough reason to try to draw attention to this and to unofficially partner with AEW on something unless they have this new deal in place that they want to get eyes on. I think that's really the cause of this happening. I'm really fascinated. I'm really intrigued to see how it plays out. I'm really interested to see the kind of questions that they're allowing Austin to throw at Jericho. Is this sort of a career retrospective, or is this balls to the wall? Let Austin talk to Jericho about leaving WWE.
All right. I brought Javier on, and then I bumped him. So let's transition over to Javier. Show's running long also, so good timing to bring him in for the cleanup session. Javier, you are up. Welcome to the show. It's funny. I keep wanting to say, what do you think of SmackDown? Because Brandon is a co-host, and I might have even said it earlier, not even realized it. But Javier, what do you think of Raw tonight?
I think you actually might have. We're going to listen back to it. I agree with your feelings on it. So it was a fine show. A little bit lacking in terms of go home, but you know it's been Raw's been weird.
Yeah.
So let me go ahead and translate like you asked.
Yeah, thanks. Yep.
It was a good performance. It did sound different because I think we mentioned that he sounded kind of like whiny and stuff in the beginning. When he transitioned to Spanish, you could tell he was a lot more comfortable and a lot more approachable.
I'm just gonna
go ahead and paraphrase what he said because it was a lot. And with the English stuff, basically he said that he was there. To perform, but then, you know, because he loves the business, he respects all the wrestlers. He mentioned all the wrestlers that he respected, the Miz. Then the Miz disrespected, his job. So he felt that he had to defend himself. This is the part that he says in Spanish was, he had to defend himself, and he's always been a lifelong fan. So he dove off the top rope because, this has always been it has always been his dream, and whenever he seizes a dream, he seizes it. So he dove off the top rope not only to defend himself, but basically this is his dream. He didn't bring up the car at all, which was what you were talking about, the it's not really necessarily something that people would connect with. He made it all about it being Miz and Morrison disrespecting him. And he went, on about the disrespect that he felt, while, he's always, respected, the business. He mentioned that a few times. And then, went back into English, and then he said, you know where we're from. And then he went back into Spanish saying, we don't know fear. We're going to teach you respect like we do back home. And we're going to break your, and it's a colloquialism, just go ahead and say face. We're going to break your face or break your skull or whatever. But it was good. When he did, the stuff he did in Spanish, you could tell he was a lot more comfortable. Oh, and that's one of I think he just went on there on his own because he did say, you guys know what I'm saying. And it went off in Spanish.
So
I don't know if he was referring to, I don't know if he was referring specifically that he, what I'm saying about being a fan, or if he's like, I'm just going to go on Spanish from here on out and you guys can figure it out. So, I dug it. I've been very agnostic on him, and I'm like, oh, this is cool. And the stuff he said, he treated the business with respect. Now, outsider, it still is kind of fantasy camp, and he kind of admitted to it, but without making it, it's like, hey, you guys would do the same. I worked for this, that's kind of the gist of it. So, trying to, make it not look as bad as, what you would normally expect. So, and he's also going to be on the same card as, or the same program as Shane McMahon. So,
Yes. Yep.
How have we not covered that yet?
Yeah, really. Yeah. Javier, do you have anything to say about that now that you brought up Shane?
Well, okay. So Shane's right because, so his stipulation is for a match where one of the ways you win is by escaping. you know, if this were like the classic old school, you know, door shut kind of thing, that would be one thing.
Yeah.
But you also have a cell. So why instead of saying a cage, you said a cell? Because a cell, again, is another theoretical. People always find themselves outside anyway. But that one has a closed door, and the match happens inside the ring. Or you have a chamber. I mean, go crazy.
Javier,
go nuts. Hey, I'm going to put you in the chamber. You know,
Javier,
but no,
it's because it's not October.
I know. I know. Or a strap match. You know, been a lot of those going on, you know, lately. So why not a strap match? It's just, you know, yeah. I mean, it's the cage match. I hate the whole storyline.
I want to say that I'm hating it less right now because Shane is so clearly defined as a heel. It's like there's no ambiguity, and they cleaned up how sloppy the execution was with Braun and Shane as of a couple of weeks ago. It's clear. Now, I wrote this in my report. Braun is relatable as a victim of bullying in the sense that who doesn't relate to a 6'5", 350-pound muscular behemoth whose main form of communication is roaring and making mean faces, who we are supposed to feel bad for because he's been picked on for people presuming he's dumb. I mean, I talked about the $2.6 to $3 million sports car getting defaced with water-soluble paint, you know, sarcastically saying that's super relatable. I don't know how many people are going to feel super bad for Braun. I don't know how many people out there are like, I'm tired of people thinking I'm dumb who are 6'5 and 320 pounds. When you talk like this, you're asking for it, right? So that said, this was like Braun was like standing up there being vulnerable, and it got through it all. And so, yes, he's 6'5", 320 pounds, and he roars for a living and doesn't, you know, project intellect. So maybe he brings it on. But I want to see Braun kick Shane's ass. And Braun better win. I don't care about this whole escape the cage thing that you astutely bring up. McMahon can't beat Braun when he's called him dumb and Braun's like, I'm going to – Shane, you can't prove that Braun's too dumb to keep Shane in the cage and beat him, can you?
I guess it depends on how much value you're placing on Braun Strowman post-WrestleMania.
Well, that's the thing is the money here and with money. Okay, I've got to take that term out of this. But the idea is for Shane to get shown up by the babyface. And I know it's like, well, it's a McMahon. They don't get shown up. Well, this Shane character should get shown up. He's pompous. He's just so annoying and heelish. And Braun is standing out there being this vulnerable 350-pound, 6'5" guy saying he's tired of people. I'm tired of people thinking I'm dumb. So – like, let Braun win. And because, like you say, Brandon, you need Braun strong. You need Braun to be a credible opponent at some point or a credible gatekeeper for future Reigns and Drew or Lashley opponents. So, I mean, do you want to prove that Braun is dumb and Shane outwitted him? I mean, I know I'm being naive to think they won't book that and that they won't have some rationalization for it, but the storyline in any other circumstance should be the babyface who gets picked on for being dumb, outsmarting and outwitting Shane because Shane underestimates Braun's intellect. That's the obvious finish. It will be crowd-pleasing, and it's what they ought to do.
I guess I just reject the entire notion of the basis of this angle in general, and that I think that, like, my biggest issue is that, like, if Braun Strowman just beats the living crap out of Shane McMahon and pins him, which is what really should happen in this match, does that prove that he's not dumb? No. It just proves that he's a big dude who beat the annoying non-wrestler. Like, it just doesn't – like, there's no way for Braun to hypothetically prove Shane McMahon wrong about being unintelligent. And for all the complaining –
He can take a Mensa test right afterwards.
Yeah. I mean, for all the complaining that Braun does and all the way that they've sort of centered his character around being this bullied youth who grew up to be a monster and become the bully, like, I'd have a lot easier time taking that character seriously if Braun Strowman's entire internet personality wasn't bullying indie wrestlers.
There you go. Yep.
He's a cold character. This is a cold angle. There was a week, I don't remember when this was, it was at the start of this feud, though, where Shane was repeating himself so many times and going nowhere and running in circles with the promo that I thought it was a joke.
Yeah.
I thought that they had just given up on live television. It was just beyond awful. And, I mean, it's gotten a little better in the sense that, like, they've had some direction to their promos, but let me put it this way. These are two nights worth of wrestling. This is a big WrestleMania card. There's a lot of matches on here. If you ask me to rank them from most to least excited, this match is dead last, and it's not even close.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Javier, chime in on this.
I was just thinking because I was recontextualizing the story is basically Braun Strowman, no Shane, I'm not a big stupid monster, and I'm going to prove it by beating you up. So, yeah,
and the start to the angle was really Braun Strowman doesn't understand the difference between WWE champion and Universal champion. Hence, maybe he is dumb. So here we go.
Was that actually the reason the start? Like, is that what Shane's point was initially, or is that more happenstance?
I think.
Because those early promos were so convoluted.
Strowman demanded to be put in the Elimination Chamber, and Shane and Adam Pearce pointed out that the chamber was for former WWE champions. And Strowman said, well, I am a former champion. And they clarified that he was Universal champion, so he wasn't qualified. And then the next week it morphed into, you're pretty stupid.
I don't know if they did. It'd be funny if they just forgot to do that.
They did in between. They did mention they did that one where Shane McMahon. We still thought Braun Strowman was the heel at this point, and Shane McMahon dropped like a dumb reference, and he's like, "What?" And then he's like, "Oh no!" And then he like played it off. They did that for 1 week, and then the next week is when they went like all in on the him being dumb. So there was that one little. I mean, but yeah, it was. I'm going to have to write about that on the primer.
Who would have thought on the 20th anniversary of Shane McMahon facing Vince McMahon in this hugely personal father versus son battle that Shane McMahon would be wrestling again and the entire feud would be based on the fact that he called a big wrestler dumb?
Yeah. Yep. All right. Javier, what else have you got for us?
Well, I have to apologize to all the listeners because I thought I had prepped everybody about the Hurt Business breaking up because I rang that bell a while ago. When Hurt Business lost the titles, Vince McMahon just doesn't see groups as a multiplicative force, and he sees it as additive. And on that night, why take the belt away from them? Don't you want them strong? That way you have the entire group look strong next to your champions looking strong. Well, that very thing that people were talking about is the reason why Vince McMahon doesn't want them around, because then he's handcuffed in booking what he does with the rest of the group. You know, he can't do 50-50 booking with Cedric and Shelton like they do. And I'm not defending this at all. I'm just explaining his logic and why it was inevitable.
We know you love it. We know you love it.
And then, you know, so I knew from that moment that they weren't going to be together by WrestleMania. I'm actually surprised that the MVP hasn't been kicked off to the wayside either. Although what I saw today with Cedric and Shelton bring up the fact that he's a hanger-on and a lackey is also a warning bell that maybe MVP is not long for a post-WrestleMania. If Lashley loses, Lashley would take it out on MVP. So, so that goes even further, you know, down to the expect Lashley to be on his own because man wants the spotlight completely on his star, is his usual MO. So, look at Roman Reigns, Yeah, I was going to say, because look at Roman Reigns and, like, how, you know, Jey Uso's still around, but Jey Uso, we just talked that he hasn't won a match in how long. He's kind of there just as fodder, but that's the role that he plays. The spotlight ever since, you know, he joined has been completely off of Uso because it's all on Reigns. And he's just like a means to an end. So it's not like, you know, so you don't, you know, so unless they're going to do the same thing with the Hurt Business, they were just going to be like toadies. That would be the only way that would be stick around. I don't think they're going to do that.
I think he's playing with fire there too, because I think that part of the reason that Lashley has been so successful is because he surrounded himself with these characters that work, particularly MVP. And if he loses MVP and Lashley's forced to go out there and cut promos on his own without, you know, sharing the mic duties with MVP, I think you might see some exposure of Lashley that you don't necessarily want to see. So this could hurt everyone in the Hurt Business in the long run. And Javier, you make a great point there with Alexander and Benjamin losing the tag titles. I kind of had a ping of that thought as well when I saw that happen. But for me, and I think you nailed it, but I think that WWE was at least smart in sort of covering their tracks because they got me there. And my thought was, all right, they moved the titles on to New Day quickly because they needed something for AJ Styles and Omos at WrestleMania, and they thought that the fodder with New Day would be fun. And because Vince has a soft spot for AJ. We know that, and we knew that AJ was kind of lost in the shuffle. So immediately after they won the tag team titles, they didn't even wait a week. I mean, AJ Styles was out there right after they won those titles. So I thought it was that move, but I think it was a double move, and I think you nailed the other part of it.
Yeah, I think I might have brought that up because the moment that that Styles almost came out and they were, you know, and they had Shelton and Cedric slink to the back. I'm like, well, there's no interest in Shelton and Benjamin. I mean, the one plus side is I did like Cedric Alexander's performance when he confronted MVP, and I've heard that there's, you know, that in the locker, there's discontent in the locker room for breaking up the group. So maybe they're going to get a little bit afterwards, you know? So that's my hope because I mean, I was thinking like, I kind of wish Alexander would leave and go to Impact because I think he'd fit like perfectly well there. As the top guy there. So, I'm hoping they do something with him and it did, you know, and with Shelton coming in for the defense too, maybe, but, I'm not holding up hope with that.
Yeah. I'm curious. I mean, the reaction to Hurt Business being broken up is strong. And not just among fans and it also in wrestling. So, I don't know. I don't know that they can correct course, but giving Shelton and Cedric a legit push is good. I'm not sure that Cedric telling MVP, I might not be able to beat Lashley, but I'm going to put up a good fight. Like, not sure that that's a path to stardom is when you're just selling yourself short even before the bell rings like that. But we'll see. We'll see.
And as far as what comes next, I'm not concerned what comes next right now because I think that Drew and Lash are going to be wrestling for a while. I mean, you know, there's only four pay-per-views or three pay-per-views between now and SummerSlam, or four pay-per-views between now and SummerSlam, one of them being Money in the Bank. You could put a slight detour in the way, and you could have Lash and Drew, you know, face off again at SummerSlam. Or, you know, and as far as the next opponent, the only one I would guess that wasn't mentioned is Edge, because Edge originally was on Raw, so, and he's currently on SmackDown.
Oh, good point, good. Yeah.
Yeah. So, and so if he fails
yeah, that actually,
getting
I'm glad
that
you
title,
that
yeah.
That could absolutely be, you know, the answer to our question earlier in terms of what's
yeah.
next for Drew. Yeah.
Yeah, especially for SummerSlam. I think that's a good SummerSlam main event.
Yep.
Yeah, he could win the Money in the Bank and then actually cash it in at and say that he wants a SummerSlam instead of, you know, doing the, you know, it, you know, since his was the famous first surprise cash in, this time he says, no, I'm going to do this, you know, one-on-one and, like, you know, ahead because I'm so confident I could win, maybe something like that for SummerSlam.
Yeah, yep.
And then that way you don't have to worry about having two stupid briefcases around. So,
yeah. Yeah, and I like yeah. switching that up where, you know, it seems it's supposed to be unpredictable, but it's become predictable because of the way that they do it every year. So, yeah, I like the idea of a premeditated cash-in.
And the last thing I want to is I actually prefer Ripley coming as Rhea Ripley coming as a heel because I really dug her heel run in NXT UK. Against Toni Storm, it was, you know,
yeah.
and eventually it was the fans who turned her. I think your two, like, top future women are Bianca Belair and Rhea Ripley. And if you keep Bianca Belair as a strong face on one program and then Rhea Ripley is a strong heel on the other one, you eventually, you know, have them face each other down the road. And I like the idea of if Becky comes back, that'd be a great, you know, Rhea Ripley and Becky would be a great challenge. I don't like face Charlotte, but, you know, I'd rather see, you know, I think there's more face women that can challenge Ripley. And I did like her, you know, she, you know, I did like her run. It's whether, you know, the fans then turn her face because, you know, they book badasses. They book heels better than they book the baby faces for the most part.
Javier, you say that you don't like babyface Charlotte, but the good news is that she's always only 2 weeks away from a heel turn.
Yeah. I don't think she could actually, like, you know, not, you know, prevent it. You know, it's almost like it's in her DNA. So.
Yeah, and it's actually, I take that back a little bit because she won't actually turn heel. She'll just be heel all of a sudden.
There is that, yes.
Yeah.
All right. All right, cool. Great hearing from you, Javier, as always.
All right.
Anything you want to plug?
Keep an eye out for the double-decker. oh, man. The WrestleMania. 14 matches,
yep.
Huh? Okay. All right. So keep an eye out for that.
How many matches?
Have a good one. 14
matches
at this point? 14, I believe.
Oh, good. I thought you said 40, and I thought, man, did I miss out on some news announcements. You
yeah,
made my heart
yeah.
skip a beat there.
And they all have Shane McMahon in them.
Oh,
all
man.
Right, very cool. Thanks, Javier. Appreciate it.
Have a good night.
Take care. Yeah. All right. Let's hit some emails here. I appreciate those who sent in emails. Chris B. in Long Island says, hey, Wade, Raw wasn't really doing much for me tonight, but I must say the one thing that stood out in a good way was Bad Bunny's in-ring promo. I have to say that he was believable, articulate, and a great babyface here. I'm also glad they added Damian Priest and John Morrison to the match since it should be much better with them added. We'd love to hear your thoughts. And go VIP, Chris B. in Long Island. I do think, I mean, we talked about this earlier, but Bad Bunny was at risk with that whole 24/7 thing and acting like a badass because I'm the 24/7 champion. Look at me. I'm awesome. It was a little much, and he looked like he was taking himself too seriously. Then he avoided doing the job. You know, like, wait a second. You don't get to become a champion and not lose it in the ring. So, I mean, in a way, I think humanizing him a little bit was good.
Yeah.
And you know, it was a little long, but it didn't feel self-indulgent. It felt earnest and just sort of amateurish, like a guy speaking from the heart
and maybe talking a little too long. Maybe we'll see more of those tomorrow night on the Hall of Fame speeches, although there's the beauty of editing that can come into play this time. So, yeah.
That's a lot of speeches.
I think there'll be a lot of editing. So, what do you think, Brian?
Yeah, I think that, like we kind of went over before, I think that he endeared himself tonight to an audience that might otherwise and might still be a little hostile toward him, but I think that he probably took the edge off a bit tonight, and overall I would give that promo and that situation a thumbs up. I would say that I do expect a solid match out of these four on is it Saturday or Sunday? Which night is this match?
I think Sunday. I'm not
maybe.
Sure now.
I've lost track. I don't know.
Yep.
So whatever night it is, I do expect a solid tag match out of them. I think Bad Bunny will get in a couple of decent spots that hopefully they set up well. Damian Priest has been impressive on the main roster so far, and I'm looking forward to seeing him sort of get an opportunity on the big stage. And Miz and Morrison have kind of rejuvenated themselves to some extent since coming over to Raw. I mean, granted, part of that is that the brief world title run for the Miz, but I think that they've been doing a good job, and they've been a good foil to Bad Bunny and Damian Priest. I would think it's pretty obvious that they take the loss here, but I imagine that they make Priest and Bunny look really good doing it. I actually just recently listened to The Miz on Renee Young's podcast, or Renee Paquette's podcast. And he was really, really if you want to hate The Miz, I don't suggest listening to this interview because he's a really, really likable guy who knows exactly who he is, exactly the character that he plays, and is going to give you 100% every single night, no matter what. You will not – I don't think we can ever accuse The Miz of phoning it in. And he made a case for himself for the run that he's on, for the situation that he's in now heading into WrestleMania. And he's a really, really likable talent who has had a really incredible and impressive run in this company. So I'm happy for him, and I'm happy for John Morrison to have a big spot on this card.
I got to check that out. That sounds good. And for people who want to hate Miz, like you said, don't listen, apparently.
It's really good, and I would recommend any, really, of the oral sessions that Renee has done so far. I think that Renee's disarming charm and ability that she portrayed on WWE TV has carried over probably exactly as you think it would into long-form podcast interviewing. She's just so good at having conversations with the people that she talks to. And you can tell that she has close personal relationships with the people that she's interviewing, and they're happy to be there. They're happy to talk to her. She had CM Punk on the show, and he was excellent. I mean, pick any one of the guests that she's had, and she's gotten a great interview out of all of them.
Excellent. All right. Up next, Zach in Texas. Miz and Morrison should be in jail right now. Not for attacking Bad Bunny, but for defacing that beautiful Bugatti sports car. That sweet ride did nothing to them, but what they did was a crime. Speaking of crimes, there's the Raw Women's Division. All right. The booking of that entire division has been criminal booking malpractice for almost a year now. Asuka and Rhea Ripley deserve better than a thrown-together two-week build featuring the same can-they-coexist nonsense that Sasha and Bianca were subjected to. Ripley should have been on TV building this match up since the Rumble instead of sitting and catering. They had Ripley in catering, for crying out loud. Just incompetence. The women's tag division isn't much better. The tag team title match is even more thrown together. At this point, I'm rooting for whatever challengers to win, so I don't have to watch Nia Jax attempt to wrestle each week. I just want someone to book the women like they give a damn. Is that too much to ask? So, Brandon, my question to you, is that fair? You can make the case that if Lacey didn't get pregnant, if Charlotte didn't have her situation, the idea of introducing Ripley as a backup plan would have taken way more foresight than that should be expected to have. And if you put her on TV before you're ready to push her, I mean, we can say WWE should operate that way, that there should be people under the radar and they're winning matches, and every match on Raw shouldn't have to be an angle or a competitive match for 50-50 booking that you know, I mean, that you can just have things that exist because people like to watch wrestling. But Vince doesn't think that. You know, like everything has to be right now having to do with the next pay-per-view. But you could have had Ripley just winning some matches and building up. But that's not how they work. So given right. that's not how they work, I think having Ripley sit in catering makes sense because they probably would have had a big day after WrestleMania moment planned for her.
Sure.
And they had to call an audible. And, you know, we can talk about whether they did a good job with the audible. But it's not – I think if there's so many places WWE doesn't deserve slack. This is one area where I think they do. And Javier made his case for Ripley as a heel. I don't think he's going to be a bad heel, but I think it's I think Ripley is a type of character you just want to introduce her as a face and never stay face. And I think they have enough heels. If Charlotte's a heel, Bayley's a heel, Sasha's a heel, I think you can have enough heels where you can have Bianca and Rhea as your coexisting top baby faces on opposite brands, and they don't cross paths for 3 years, and then you can turn one of them.
Sure. Yeah, I agree with everything that you said there. I want to say that there is fairness in that criticism because I think WWE should have had more foresight to recognize that Charlotte Flair versus Lacey Evans is not the women's title match you want at WrestleMania for your first women's title program on Raw back in front of a live audience. And I say that because Charlotte Flair has been a floundering mess of a character for the better part of the last 2 years. She wasn't particularly over, aside from the Woo chant, which is, I mean, the Woo chant is the Woo chant. I mean, it would be there whether Charlotte was there or not. And I love Charlotte, don't get me wrong. An incredible talent who has been booked horribly, and it has damaged her character greatly. Versus Lacey Evans, who by and large has never really been an over character, at least to any real title contention extent. And then you add Ric Flair into the mix. I don't think that's the message that you want to send on your biggest show of the year. To me, with a cold Charlotte Flair and a Lacey Evans character who isn't over, the best that you could have hoped for in a match like that is for the crowd to just be going nuts for Ric Flair. And is that the message that you want to send about your Raw Women's Championship? I don't think it is. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm underestimating what those two could have done. I don't think it would have been a great match. Yeah. I don't necessarily think that their styles mesh all together all that well. And I don't think that Ric Flair would have been able to help himself from stealing the spotlight. So with all of that in mind, yeah, you have the foresight then to bring Rhea Ripley to the main roster the night after the Royal Rumble, after she has that impressive showing, and you line her up to either face Asuka or to face Charlotte, whatever direction you want to go. Now, granted, they didn't foresee Charlotte getting COVID, so in this world, Charlotte ends up off the pay-per-view anyway. But regardless, I think Rhea Ripley should have been your challenger, not Charlotte challenging Lacey Evans.
All right, let's wrap up with one more email, JB from Detroit. I'm not a fan of using the first night of Mania as a qualifying match for the women's tag titles to take place on the second night of Mania. In my opinion, this isn't something that should be in your biggest show of the year in any form and does a great job at making Saturday feel less significant than Sunday. I'm also not a fan of NXT doing this with a gauntlet eliminator to determine Gargano's North American champ, a challenger on the second night of TakeOver. Yes, but how could we have, if we didn't have that, we wouldn't have Gargano hilariously complaining to Regal about him needing more time to determine who, or to plan for these million possibilities. Yeah, I mean, this is not going to be an ongoing problem. I think WrestleMania will be back to one night next year. I do want to run it. You were right. I think you were right when you said Miz and Bad Bunny. That tag match will be on Saturday.
Okay.
I did look that up. The first night has Bobby and Drew, Sasha and Bianca as the top two matches. Then you have the special match of Shane Braun and the Bad Bunny tag match. You also have Amos for the first time wrestling in the tag title in Seth and Cesaro. And now you have a qualifying match. I think that's a strong enough lineup. And I think the qualifying match is clearly, you know, clearly and decisively the least significant match on that first night.
Sure.
I would have a problem if there were a bunch of throwaway matches that first night, but that's a pretty good lineup. I mean,
the special attractions on WrestleMania that are out of the ordinary are Amos wrestling for the first time, Bad Bunny novelty, and Shane McMahon as a McMahon. And on night two, it's The Fiend, and then just the notion of Edge, who hasn't wrestled a lot. I mean, it's not a lot. The second night is kind of more of a wrestler, you know, more of a wrestling night, or a standard lineup. It's not Shane, Bad Bunny, and I guess Amos as a novelty. I don't have a big backlash to it. I don't think it's going to be an ongoing issue. But, I mean, obviously the ideal thing, Brandon, would have been do something where you have a tag team ready to go that you built up and they deserve it. You don't just have this weird four-way of everyone just showing up and yelling at each other.
Yeah, I don't like it, but I'm not super upset about it. I mean, it definitely devalues the brand in a way, but these are weird shows. I mean, this, like last year, it's sort of this two-night card where you're trying to fill space and fill time and also get everyone on the roster. I think it's important to note that we don't have a Mae Young Battle Royal. So there's that aspect there, mm-hmm. trying to get the rest of the women on the roster a spot on the card somewhere. And I think you could definitely make the case that maybe this match should have been on the Go Home SmackDown versus taking up a spot on the night one of the card. But I think they just wanted to get an extra women's match on the show. I think if you polled people by and large, I would wager that they would rather see the SmackDown tag titles or the Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal in the slot that this women's qualifier is getting. But I think it's just a matter of wanting to get more women on the card, and it is what it is. I don't expect, regardless of who wins this match, I don't expect it to be anything of significance on Sunday. I assume yeah. that Jackson and Baszler retain with relative ease. It's there. I will say that overall, I think that there's less filler on these two shows than there were on last year's card. And I'm not saying that to knock WWE, because they were obviously dealt a crazy hand last year and they did what they could. But I mean, some of those matches in the Performance Center, I mean, I think back to like the tag title match between the Street Profits and was it Angel Garza and Andrade? I mean, they had just had that match on Raw on Monday and they just threw it yeah. on the WrestleMania card for no reason. I mean, at least we're not getting that kind of thing.
Yeah. All right. We'll wrap up there. Good conversation. Appreciate you joining me tonight, Brandon, as co-host, and thanks for callers and emailers. Brandon, you've got your work cut out for you. Two nights in a row covering WrestleMania. You had a practice run, and now, well, I mean, no commercial breaks, you know, like on SmackDown. So, but let's
no ability to pause. Fast forward, yeah, that's gonna be yes. great.
Although you also don't have long-winded promos, you know, like where you really yeah. try to keep up with that. So in some ways, you can kind of pick and choose, you know, the key moves and the key turning points of the match. And then, you know, during intros and stuff, put your analysis in there. But the place to be on Saturday and Sunday night on your phone, on your laptop, on your tablet is pwtorch.com. Brandon and I will both be doing live reports. You can create separate tabs for our reports, hit refresh, keep up on what we think, match analysis, star ratings, results, key things that jump out to us. You can compare what we're thinking to each other and kind of see what is notable to him that I didn't point out, and vice versa. So Brandon, looking forward to it, and I hope you are too.
Yeah, it definitely is going to be fun. This will be only my second pay-per-view. I, of course, covered Payback. Payback was the first. Fastlane. There we go, Fastlane. I covered Fastlane a few weeks ago. That was my first foray into pay-per-view coverage after relinquishing my role as the SmackDown Alt Perspective reporter. This will be my very first pay-per-view on Peacock, as I'm sure it will be for a lot of people. In a lot of ways, this feels like WrestleMania 30 all over again, because we have Daniel Bryan in a triple threat match for the main event, and absolutely no one knows how the stream is going to turn out. So lots of similarities to draw there. Hopefully we're as pleasantly surprised at the end of night one as we were with the WrestleMania 30 stream, because I recall not having issues at all during that initial WWE Network stream, so hopefully it is similar. I also also want to point out too, before I go, if you have a chance, I did a two episode stint with Frank Pettiani for WWE Then and Now. We covered Fastlane 2015, and then we came back a couple of weeks later and covered WrestleMania 17, which happens to be my favorite show of all time, so much so that I wrote a special one-off article for it for The Torch, which you can read right now, both on the regular site and the VIP side. And that was a ton of fun. It was super cool talking about that show with Frank, and then writing that look back and kind of watching the show for the first time in many, many years. It's been, man, at least 10 years or so since I've seen it, probably more.
Yeah, that is super cool. So check out that article. It's headline guest column, WrestleMania X7, look back at peakwtorch.com. VIP members can get it free on our VIP site. And you can go to the opinion and analysis section and find it a little quicker if you go to our menu. Brandon, thanks so much. Great stuff. And we'll read what you have to say on Saturday and Sunday.
Sounds good.
Oh, hey, did you mention Twitter yet, or do you want to?
Yeah, sure. You can follow me at BLeClaire12 on Twitter. I will, I'm hoping to maybe do a little bit of live tweeting during the show if I can catch a break during the typing. I'll see how it goes, but
yeah.
I want to try to talk about the show a little bit as it's going on, and I'm sure I'll be tweeting this week too with so much happening with all these shows this week. I don't know how many I'm going to watch live, but probably a lot of late night viewings for me with like the Hall of Fame and whatnot this week.
Yep, so BLECLAIR 12.
Yep, that's the number 12.
Yep, and you can follow me on Twitter at The Wade Keller. That's at The Wade Keller. And, of course, follow our brand at PW Torch. Thanks again, Brandon, and thanks to everybody else. We'll talk to you next time.